Okay, no, this was the one, sorry. I was, like, looking through the playlist earlier today, and I was like, what the fuck was Rabbits in the Creek?
Oh, yeah.
No, Rabbits in the Creek was awesome.
I liked that story.
Yeah, no, I remembered it later. God damn it. Ah!
What the fuck? I heard our voices echoing.
I accidentally clicked the thing
while
I was looking through that playlist.
So, has anybody in the history of ever, like, ever thought, being buried alive, that's not horrible?
I don't understand, like, what qualifies as being claustrophobic. It's like, are you claustrophobic at all? It's like, if you bury me in a fucking coffin, yeah.
I think that's what you call a selective claustrophobia. I think
it's like, are you claustrophobia? No, you can't be claustrophobic and fuck your mom's vagina. Did I fuck up that joke? I don't know.
By that standing, everybody's a little bit claustrophobic sometimes.
Sometimes.
I get a good feeling.
I have been in a coffin exactly once. In high school, it was a coffin we were using for a play.
Oh, okay.
And I was, you know, cool about it until the moment the lid shut.
Oh dear!
I was like, oh yeah, no, this is funny. Get me out! Get me out! Get me the fuck out of here right now!
Can't say I blame you. I have a weird coffin fact for everybody. Did you know that it's illegal to have a previously owned coffin and use it for any sort of funerary service?
Did you really just did you know us?
Did you know? Well, I'm curious. Did you know?
I feel like I've heard something to that effect before, yeah.
So let me understand the meaning of this. If I own a coffin because I'm a vampire enthusiast and I sleep in it, I'm not allowed to resell it to somebody else for them to be buried in.
Since you're a vampire, you're technically dead. So if a dead body has been in a coffin,
I'm dead because that's my name.
But yeah, anyway,
we didn't make that joke earlier today.
We didn't do that in the pre-roll
in a different recording. We've never made that joke ever before.
Just like I never talk about how I was enamored with your religious pizza experience that one time. Like I didn't mention that 500 times in the past.
You stand up from the table and I slip up. Brandon preed all over the place.
I was wondering why my shoes were so sticky.
No, that's just how Jerry's always is.
Oh, okay. So everybody... No, I just assumed that was... I didn't get to have any pizza when I was there. Keep that in mind. You're the one who ate all the pizza.
Speaking of things we never talk about, the name of the story we're reading today...
Oh, yeah? What are we reading today?
The name of the story we're reading today is The Vulture in the Dream.
Okay, that's interesting.
I wonder what that could allude to. Maybe it's like Ho-Oh. It's like Ash seeing Ho-Oh, and he's like chasing it down, and he's like, I gotta see all of these Pokemon. I gotta chase this vulture.
What was that Pokemon? I mean, no one can tell you what that Pokemon is. It's not technically in the Dex yet.
Yeah.
This story was sent...
All I know is that I'm on my way to Viridian City.
My
badge.
On the road.
And the power to play.
Come on, let's play.
Oh my god, that's the undercooked discussion we need to have. Is
how great to be a master is?
Yeah, that is like legitimately like my third favorite album of all time. It's so good.
I'm not even laughing because I think that's like even sarcasm. I'm like legit stoked. And I know we've talked about this before, like in person.
Yeah.
But
like everything changes? Oh my god, that is the jam.
What about the that cool techno one, the Pokemon dance mix or whatever? The do 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 do.
Yeah.
catchy as fuck. This story was sent to us by username 159, who, you know, is...
How am I the only one of us not having sex right now?
That is a eminently good question. I mean, if
my name's Brandon, and I like having sex with people.
Certain people.
Anyway.
Obviously, certain people. I'm not just going to have sex with anyone, David. I'm sorry I had to turn down your advances in California, but...
You hear that? It's the sound of the world's smallest violin.
And I just had to cuddle with Slime Beast for the whole trip.
To be fair, I think I see him sometimes looking out the window, just, you know, pining for you still. I'll come down in the middle of the night, the vulture just propped up, staring at the moon, imagining...
So, the vulture in the dream, the Fandom 100, from Luke Skywalker to Pickle Rick, breaking down 2017's most iconic characters.
Yeah, I saw that.
What?
Look down in your right-hand corner.
Oh.
Yeah, fandom is cancer.
Username 159 said, I typed vultures into the search bar on the CPW, and these were the first two results. First story was called Just Vultures, and The Vulture in the Dreams.
I'm assuming that he was looking for stories by 1,000 Vultures, the writer of...
Yeah, that's kind of what I assumed. There's more to the message, but it's, like, not that important.
No.
Yeah.
I have not read either of these, but yeah.
If you want a more intense story, you need to look up A Million Vultures.
Hey, do you suppose if 1,000 Vultures, like, wrote a sequel to Pen Pal, not that there would be any room for it, but a sequel, would Dathan Arbok take 1 Million Vultures as a pen name? Or can we take 1 Million Vultures as a pen name? Collectively, can we be 1 Million Vultures?
Sure, David.
Like, just the three of us. I don't want to be the welcome committee anymore. Don't want to be the Uka Hakru. Let's just be A Million Vultures.
I always liked the Goop Troop, personally.
Oh, Goop Troop. Yeah, Goop Troop's pretty good.
What about just, like, 1 million murders? It's like a murder of crows, but 1 million murders of crows. So that would be, like, you don't know how many crows are in each murder. It varies, but it is murders times 1 million.
That's a lot of murder!
I used to play bass for 1 million murders.
I have to mention this. There's a running joke in Magic the Gathering about a card called Stormcrow and how Stormcrow is the best card in Magic. It's just a 1/2 bird with flying, blue bird, and has the flavor text Stormcrow descending, winter unending, Stormcrow departing, summer is starting. But recently...
Those sound like Metallica lyrics.
Right?
Darkness, all that I see, absolute dark.
No parents. But then... You're welcome.
That'd be great. It's just David trying... David looking at Metallica lyrics and just rewriting them to be more honest.
I was just putting Lego Batman there going, no parents. The reason I bring it up is the new Unstable set. By the time this goes up, it should be out by now. And one of the best cards in the set is called Crow Storm. And it's a card that summons a bunch of tokens that are called Storm Crow. And the flavor text on the card is amazing. It's Storm Crow lonely, boon for a birder. Storm Crows together, likely a murder.
That's good.
And the whole idea is the set is supposed to be ridiculous and silly, so the fact that they took the Stormcrow meme and made it into a different kind of card that's actually pretty good, because you can make as many Stormcrow tokens as you've cast spells before it that turn. So it's pretty nuts. It has the potential to be pretty nuts. But
I don't know how I feel about them clearly forcing a meme, though.
Well, it's not a meme. I don't know.
It's just like trying to force bird aviary related memes. I don't know.
Yeah,
Anyway, I just expect better of Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah, anyway. I know, I realize.
The Vulture in the Dream.
Yeah, so let's do the Vulture in the Dream. There are strange beings.
That's an interesting wet dream, David.
I mean, if you asked Wesley Willis about that, he'd just be like,
"The vultures, the vultures, the vultures, the vultures."
There are strange beings and phenomena that are
getting back into this, warming up.
She sells seashells by the seashore. There are strange beings and phenomena that are seen and occur every single day, which modern science can't truly explain. There are other horrible worlds and eerie dimensions constantly pressing upon our own, and only a select few with rare minds that are able to see it. In this case, the one who would have an encounter with an entity from those bizarre realms would be just an ordinary student and young man with a love of learning. Ooh, boy. Okay.
Okay, so...
This sounds like a... This is like the ultimate prologue paragraph.
It's not that it's bad or anything. It's just that I always get mad at passive voices in Creepypasta.
Yeah.
It's really hard to do right.
Mm-hmm. The thing that stands out to me is this feels like the opening narration for a... like, you don't press start immediately, so you get the opening, like, prologue cutscene for an RPG, like a fantasy RPG.
Some people, okay, I'm glad I'm not the only one, because I'm like, if I say Undertale, will people get mad at me? This kind of feels like Undertale to me. Yeah, like, it's not the same thing, but, like, that kind of flavor of opening.
Yeah, I was thinking almost like Wind Waker for a second.
Yeah, I can see that.
Mm-hmm. You know, on a certain island, young men are expected to, you know, that sort of thing. Like, who knew that the fate of the world would cross the path of this young soul? You know, that sort of thing.
Young men, one student often finds his days in the school library or at home, with volumes of books on folklore and mythology spread all over his desk. He's read countless texts and takes multiple pages of notes at a time. He excelled in all of his coursework and participated eagerly in class.
Weirdly enough, he was studying advanced calculus. He's a math major.
Despite his studious nature, the student was not a stay-at-home recluse. Spider. He was not a spider.
We're not bringing Spider-Man into this, Alan.
He is, in fact, many spiders.
Stay-at-home recluse sounds like a spider that's agoraphobic. It's like Spider-Man, but he's afraid to go outside. It's like, dude, you can swing from building to building. It's like, yeah, but like, there's all those toxins out there. There's so much pollution in New York.
There's a Spider-Man league. There's ones that are like made up of different kinds of spiders, and there's one made up of brown recluse spiders. It's just like, I don't know if I'm gonna come out today, you guys.
I really like the idea of there being a really ineffective group of spiders men that, or a spiders man that's composed only of daddy long legs.
Yes.
but the stay at home recluse is like, no, I don't want to go outside. And then like Iron Man's shows up and he's made out of a bunch of irons. And he's just like, no, I understand what you're doing here. You're trying to like, refuse the call to action. This is part of the hero's journey. And he's like, no, I'm just like, I really don't want to go outside, guys.
His theme song whenever he shows up is just the Lazy Song by Bruno Mars.
He'd frequently engage in discussions with fellow colleagues and classmates regarding ideas, philosophy, or their daily lives. Again, I'd like everyone to know I'm operating on half glasses right now.
He's looking at this story through the lens of truth.
I lost a glasses lens. I have an eye appointment tomorrow, so this is what I got to work with.
Alan,
he wasn't.
Your dedication is noted and appreciated, my friend.
He wasn't the kind of person you would.
Hey! Hey! Hey!
No, goddammit.
If you think Alan could really use a new pair of glasses, Why don't you go over to blueapron.com and fill out a form and just type in the user code Alan has broke ass glasses to get 20% off your loot box. Or you could like donate to Patreon.
That I think it's time for you to find some other dumb block. We keep interrupting Alan's paragraph.
Well, welcome to hour three of my paragraph. He wasn't the kind of person you would find attending wild parties with excessive drinking or dancing.
Boo.
Just the person who would participate in deep conversations at a round table.
Cool.
Despite his calm personality and his bookish mannerisms, his life would ultimately take a turn for the absolute worst. Front-loading! His placid, peaceful life of pursuing his interests would come to an abrupt halt and would turn into a nightmarish descent into horrible front-loading.
You know, his life was simple and clean.
Then his life got flipped, turned upside down. When you walk away, you don't hear me say, in West Philadelphia, born and raised.
At the beginning of the story is where we put all of our front loading.
And all of our True Force memes. We didn't miss any, did we?
No.
Yeah. It all started with a dream. The student envisioned himself walking down...
Started out with a kiss.
It started
We're not
with
going...
a whisper.
Oh my god. This is going to take so long, guys.
I know. The student envisioned himself walking down the street where he grew up in. Except... That's a weird sentence. Except it would be absolutely silent. Generally, his street was a quiet one with not much going on in it. But in this case... The silence was so heavy that it almost had a loudness to it. The houses seemed decrepit and alone, and there was a foreboding feeling looming about. The sky was a sick, aged grayish color, without any sunlight glinting through. So he's walking through the neighborhood from No End House.
He's walking through the neighborhood from Channel Zero, No End House, is what you
okay,
mean, right?
Thank you, yes. That thing that misappropriated No End House.
Yeah, that is what is happening.
Let's clarify.
Again, I don't... The front-loading wasn't good. This paragraph isn't doing anything to particularly upset me.
No.
It's just... I feel that there's going to be structural problems here.
Probably.
The lush green grass and tall trees... and trees, which were generally bespeckled with flowers and leaves, were absent. The grass had turned into a withered, dry yellow, and the trees were now twisted and rotting, and their bots were barren?
Boughs.
Very flowery language, and I'm not just speaking about the fact that they're talking about flora and fauna. I feel like these two paragraphs should be one paragraph.
Yeah, they should be.
Yeah. For sure.
And so the question is, are they going to get purple prose fatigue and stop doing purple prose?
That's usually what happens, but I mean, it remains to be seen.
Everything was forlorn and destroyed. It appeared grotesque and falling apart, as if anything that even showed a vague sign of life had died or been deserted.
Absolute darkness, all that I see.
No parents!
No parents!
Despite this, he felt eyes peering at him from everywhere. Or everywhere? Somewhere. Specific. Look, over there. It's a thing. The student... What is this? The student wasn't able to pinpoint what it was, but something instinctively told him that it was coming from somewhere above him. He was standing beside a towering, thick tree trunk, and he gazed upward. On one of the long, thin clawed branches sat an eerie, dark vulture staring down at him.
Is our narrator H.P. Lovecraft? Like the actual human being who lived at once upon a time?
I think our narrator is Wesley Willis.
I think our narrator.
Alan, are you masturbating a robo penis? Because what sound am I hearing?
Wait, you heard that?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I've been making a little money on the side as a robot prostitute.
jerking off robots?
Yes.
They were programmed to feel lust, but never love.
Yes.
Does anything come out?
Shame.
Physical manifestation of shame. Where were we? I think it's actually Alan's turn. No, wait. I just read the last one, so it's.
What did you read?
On the vulture. There was a vulture.
Yeah. There was a vulture. The vulture staring down at him. A very large, hideous bird was unlike any sort of vulture he had seen in documentaries or in books. In fact, it might not have even been a vulture. It could have been some other kind of bird.
What if it was a California condor, man? Like, that's a big mistake.
It could have been a vulture, but it also could have been any number of other birds. He was not a hornithologist.
A hornithologist?
What is that? What's the term for like?
It's just abusing. It's an ornithologist. But I like the idea of a hornithologist is that it's someone who's really into studying the horns on birds.
Hornithologist is the name of a book I'm working on about a guy who fucks birds.
He's only into hornbills.
It appeared to be hunched over, staring at him intently with its blood-red eyes that seemed to be hyper-realistic, that seemed to be glowing menacingly. Its fleshy head was a dull, dark black, with its black beak shining like a polished blade in the sunlight. It's bright out.
Yeah, well, they said it was gray. The author said it was a gray. Narrator said it was a gray sky thing, but that there was light coming through. I don't know. Anyway.
The tip of its beak appeared to be shaded silver. It's scarily monstrous. Gray feet were clinging onto the branch with its razor-sharp talons. David, can you seamlessly cut in the entire time I'm reading that line, the actual "it's no use" under everything I'm saying? Just like far in the distance, but...
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So this is not very... I don't like this.
I'm kind of bored. Maybe we should have read the other vulture story.
In a deep, dark woods that's also during sunlight, there's a deep, dark
vulture
that has a deep, dark beak.
Penis.
Well, aren't bird penises normally deep, like buried inside them? And then they have to emerge in order to do the mating?
I'd bury a bird penis in someone, I don't know.
Welcome to Under Cloaca Analysis.
Hey, you know what? The accurate, that it still works for UCA.
It sure does.
Like, why, Alan, why are you really trying to force cloacas on us, man?
I don't know.
Stop. If I... You know, we have a real problem with you, Alan, forcing all these memes.
Yeah, sorry.
I mean, David and I have talked about it, and we're just like, we really need Alan to stop forcing memes.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to this vulture story.
Yeah, back to the vulture story.
As he ran?
Both the above it.
Oh. As he ran? He ran so far away?
He couldn't get away? He couldn't get away.
Both the student and the vulture's eyes were locked on
to flock of vultures. There was a joke there, I knew it.
There it was.
Both the student's and the vulture's eyes were locked onto each other. The bird of prey's flaming eyes burned into... Is he about to fuck this bird? The more he stared at the unmoving creature, the more he became aroused. He felt it analyzing him carefully, the way this type of animal does when it looks at a dying animal to claim it as its meal.
He really is a hornithologist.
The sexual tension began to increasingly take hold of him. As the wicked bird sat there observing him almost mockingly, with a sexuality so immense that it seemed to be crushing his soul. Finding the strength, the young man whirled around and dashed down those desolate streets to escape from that evil thing's cloaca. Even though he was not facing it, he could still feel the vulture's eyes on him, locked on him the way a vulture can see its prey from incredible distances.
That seems redundant.
I should just mention for transparency that fucking Alan is trolling and he's replacing words whenever he's...
I didn't have to replace very much.
No. But every time a ridiculously verbose word like malignity came up, he replaced it with a stupid word.
Hey, future David, can you put Careless Whisper under a bunch of this? Okay, thank you.
I'm actually kind of surprised that this person hasn't given up on the purple prose yet.
So far.
And it looks like they might not. This whole story might be this overwrought.
If I'll say this much, if the purple prose is kept, if the same verbiage is kept through the entire story, I will actually give the author a little bit of credit for staying committed.
I think it'd be the first time we ever had someone truly commit to purple prose on Undercooked Analysis.
It's true. I'll be curious to see if this author breaks that is the first to set that straight.
I did mention that is our narrator H.P. Lovecraft.
Yep.
We don't know much about We don't know about much about our main character.
No, we don't. Well, our main character is a student who apparently likes to read a lot about folklore.
Both the student and the vulture's eyes locked on each other, and in that moment, the student became the vulture.
As he ran, he prayed the bird away. He prayed that the vile bird wouldn't take flight and chase him. The very thought of that filled him with utter dread, and he sprinted even quicker than before. He felt as though this entire town had become the vulture's domain. The student felt himself becoming trapped like a desperate rat searching for a way out of an endless maze, and the bird of prey was waiting for him to die of both fright and exhaustion, with its sinister red eyes following him forever. Until, finally, he woke up. Oh, okay, it was a wet dream.
Oh, good story, you guys.
Yep. So we have another story that is also vulture themed. That username one.
Actually, that there's more to this story.
Okay. I scrolled down a little bit. Yeah, there's more.
Yeah.
The vulture was following him all through the sunlit town that's entirely dark. And he thought to himself, "This must be the work of an enemy stand." He shot up in his bed, sweating profusely and trembling beneath his covers.
The vulture laying next to him.
The vulture made him sleep in the wet spot. It was morning.
It's like that fucking OK Go video with the Muppets that they did, where they keep waking up with the Muppets in bed with them, screaming, and then zooms in on the mouth, zooms back out, and they're in a different situation with different Muppets in the same bed. Sorry, go ahead.
Is OK Go still a thing? He reached for his phone, saw that it was 7:30 a.m. He had enough time to shower and leave for his classes, but he was wondering if it was taboo to kick the vulture out of bed. It's like, I know we had sex and everything, but like, what's the you know, common courtesy here. Can you, like, BTFO? get the fuck out of here. He breathed a sigh of relief. It had been a strange, unsettling wet dream he had. Where it had come from, he didn't know. The folklorist began to quietly and calmly slip out of bed, glad to return to his books, classes, and the peacefulness of his everyday life, when suddenly his phone rang, and it was the vulture asking when they were going to have another date. Suddenly, his gladness shifted to horror.
His gladness shifted to the vultures, the vultures!
Lurking out of his closed window on a lone tree branch, sitting there gazing at him with those devilish red eyes, was the same vulture of his dreams.
It was not a dream. You sit up in bed, and the ending to the story is, it wasn't a dream.
The nightmare begins anew.
Anyway, good story then.
Yeah. So, like I said, we got to send another story.
It's short. It's
called Vultures. Yeah.
So wait, no, that isn't even the end of the paragraph I was reading. Holy shit.
What the... Okay.
The student of folklore cried out in fear and immediately buried his head beneath his blankets. See, his spirit animal was an ostrich. How could it be? He had never known a single vulture to be out in the wild around these parts.
He had never known a single vulture, period.
The only place where he had observed vultures there was at the zoo. You know, the great vulture enclosure at the zoo.
He just goes to the zoo and sits down in the vulture enclosure and sits next to a vulture and orders a drink for him and the vulture. It's like, we don't get many of your kind around here.
Down at the Roadkill Cafe.
You're cool.
Here in these parts.
You got a pretty silver beak.
What made it even weirder was that the species of vultures that were housed there did not at all resemble the one he dreamed of and was spotted outside of his window. Quaking with arousal, he began to slowly lower the blankets he was holding. His breath picked up as his line of sight slowly came into view of his room, and he could see the glass of his window. He sighed with the greatest relief when he appeared out of the blue sky in an empty tree branch.
There was no nightmarish vulture perch there. It was either his imagination or there was a bird there that he mistook for a vulture, but it had left. Either way, there was nothing to fear. The rest of this morning so far went without any sort of disruption, at least until he saw that hummingbird that he had mistaken for a vulture earlier. He doesn't really understand birds.
It's a vulture!
No, Dusty, it's a hummingbird.
Or it's actually Laparca.
Laparca is...
Just Laparca. Just Laparca out there on his tree branch.
Staring in your window.
It's Laparca without his mask on, because he mentioned him having, like, a fleshy head. It was an all black feathery darkness, but a white fleshy head. That was just Laparca. It was famous wrestler Laparca. Later in the day, while the student was sitting at a lecture in one of his classes, he was diligently taking notes, as he always did. The bizarre nightmare and the insidious bird of prey were nothing more than a dying memory now.
What?
Absolute darkness, all that I see.
No, parents!
Everything seemed normal at first. Oh my god, guys. Oh.
We're not that far in.
We're not that far
in. I really want to... I keep wanting to give this story the benefit of the doubt. I really do. I'm just not... I feel like we know from experience at this point where this is going to go. Nowhere.
It reminds me of a certain story, David. And I'm hesitant to even bring it up. But remember that one story we tackled in episode 100?
Oh, yeah, that story. We don't really talk about that story.
But... this is reminding me terribly of that story.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. This one's got more vultures in it, though.
Yeah, it does.
I mean...
Or does it, David? Does it even? Are we even sure that these are vultures? We don't have...
That's a good point. They keep saying it's like a vulture.
We don't have a reliable narrator or a reliable main character, so...
We're dealing with a double filter here. They could be looking at, like... They could be looking like just a really, really big, weird-looking crow.
Or maybe not even that. Maybe it's just a regular crow and they're fucking idiots. You maybe, don't know.
Maybe it's just... maybe it's a... It's actually a bat.
That would be my favorite ending to this story, though. If he's, like, telling someone, look at the vulture out there. And he just goes, that's a crow, you idiot, and shuts the window.
Even worse, what if it's, like, just like a duck?
That's a duck. Look out there at the evil vulture. Whack!
He goes to the park. Holy shit, vultures everywhere.
They're trying to eat the loaf of bread I always carry with me.
Look at them just sitting in the water. Alan, duck impressions forever, please.
Old Duck Dick Alan.
That's me. It's basically a corkscrew.
That's right. I think it's your paragraph, Alan.
Later in the day.
Next one.
The teacher was discussing Norse mythology. The old scholarly man was discussing how Hugin and Munin, two ravens that were under the direct command of mighty Odin and would bring him information from all over the world.
Yep.
Wait, let me read that one more time.
Okay.
The old scholarly man was discussing... Man, that's grammatically incorrect. Was discussing how Hugin and Munin, two ravens that were under the direct command of mighty Odin... It doesn't need that and. That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a...
The old scholarly man was discussing how Hugin and Munin, two ravens that were under the direct command of mighty Odin... What it should be is comma, would bring him information from all over the world.
Yes.
There we go.
Mm-hmm.
As the teacher spoke, I gave that guy shit for his grammar and then almost said, as the teacher spoke, as the teacher spoke, the young man's mind went back to the vulture, thinking how ravens and vultures are both affiliated with death, tragedy, and destruction.
Did his mind go, parents! Did his mind go to Back to the Vulture Part 1 or Back to the Vulture Part 2? It's your vultures, Marty!
God damn it, I was drinking.
I'm Raven Rick!
The student then turned to gaze outside the window for a moment, and to his utter dismay, there it was again. The devilish vulture from his nightmare stood on the other side of the windowsill. It appeared like a terrible blotch of evil black and red shadow in contrast to the sunshine and brightness of the day. No, that's just Shadow the Hedgehog, dude. This is going to go on forever, because we're more entertained by the things than we are.
Whoever wrote this, did they start writing metal lyrics and then make a whole story?
I just think, again, this is just an expand. This is Wesley Willis fan fiction.
Sewn back together wrong. Back together. It's Ember like
Paris.
Fire. No. It's Ember like fiery eyes shine hungrily and menacingly.
Ember, remember.
I really hope that this turns into a war story where the young man ends up being eaten by this vulture.
One can always hope.
The young man dropped his pencil and a cold hand ran down his spine. He felt his heart accelerate a bit as he stared at the bird perched on the sill, eyeing him like an animal on its last breath.
Can we discuss for a second that a cold hand ran down his spine?
Yeah.
Do you think he would be a little concerned by the fact that someone is touching him without his permission while he's trying to pick up his pencil?
Hey, if you're in class and someone is, like, touching you...
With a cold hand, especially.
What the fuck? not okay.
Not okay. Remember, if someone tries to touch you in a place or in a way that makes you feel uncomfortable, that's no good.
What's the name of the chicken from Sonic? Chicken.
Good Lord, someone read!
We're waiting for you, Alan.
What?
Scratch.
Can't just read.
It's Scratch. This is a chicken from Sonic. It's Scratch.
God damn it, everybody.
Could the raven just be scratched, the vulture just be scratched this whole time?
Have we ever scrapped a story mid-episode?
No, but we could. There's a first time for everything.
I'm having a great time.
But not because of the story.
I'm just frustrated with how stupidly long this story is and it's going nowhere.
Let's see if we can...
He turned his eyes towards the textbook in front of him and tried his hardest to ignore it. He knew he couldn't make a scene in the classroom, but he couldn't help but wonder if anyone else noticed. Trying his best to avoid his eyes looking in the window, he scanned the classroom and shot a glance at his teacher to see if any of them saw the evil bird staring at him. It appeared that none of them did, but how could that even be? It was impossible to miss. That vile entity was partially blocking the sun, casting an enormous shadow in the classroom.
That was really good. For an agonizing 60 seconds, the folklorist tried his hardest not to look around. He couldn't stand that fiend sitting there in front of him, almost demanding that his eyes land on it. Quoth the vulture, "I'm still here, buddy."
Quoth the vulture, "What the fuck are you looking at?"
Just to counteract the purple prose, like, as soon as there's dialogue, it is, like, just the most, like, just vernacular...
I like the idea of the vulture outside the window. It's just like, did last night mean nothing? Why do we keep calling this fucking college student a folklorist?
I don't know. Can you get a degree in folklore? I would like to get a degree in folklore. That'd be fucking rad.
I have a degree
in bullshit.
My major was folklore with a Baba Yaga emphasis.
I went to college for folkloreidry. After his session ended, he immediately stood up and scurried out of the classroom as quickly as he could.
He's a student of ornithology.
He quickly made his way to a place which he knew entirely lacked windows. The library.
It's a shitty library.
Fuck. The library was a comfortable spot where he often spent hours reading on numerous subjects that interested him. What a sentence.
Money can be exchanged for good news. It's my new... favorite sentence in the Creepypasta. In case you were confused about what the library was.
I have to stop laughing. It's hurting my throat. And I still have to read. Okay.
In this
case, he knew he would need something to completely banish those terrible thoughts. He couldn't let the damn thing grab hold of his mind.
Yes, I know it's too late.
I know. Give me a sec. He reached for book after book, from literary fiction to historical textbooks. Absolutely none of them did anything to rid him of the vulture's hideous silhouette lurking in his thoughts. He considered the school's library to be his sanctuary. Talk more about the library! It was his place to gather his thoughts, and where he satisfied his love of learning. Also, they would let you take out books.
Whoa! What a novel concept.
A novel concept.
Get it? Because it's a library.
If this place wouldn't give any comfort, there are a few other places that would. His home reminded him of that nightmare and the menacing vulture he saw at the window. He sat at one of the desks in one of the farthest corners of the room, his hands pressed against his lowered head tightly in duress.
Then, suddenly, something came into his mind. He would do something a little bold, something he'd never done before, and was completely out of his nature. He would
jerk off in the library.
I mean, who hasn't?
Notably, only a handful of students gain access to what he was thinking of. Get what? But he was a student that was well-liked. Oh, okay. Is he at the Miskatonic University? Is he going to go into the restricted section of the library and look at the Necronomicon?
Well, he's in a library that doesn't have any fucking windows.
Yeah, so clearly this is Miskatonic.
I love how Alan's like laughing. It was like, yeah, that's what a library is. But obviously, this is not like any other library that we've ever been to, Alan. This is not like any library in our reality that has windows.
It's an underground library.
Come to the windowless library. It's dark as fuck.
No parents. But he was a student that was well-liked and who had made good friends with the library staff and had a clean record of returning books in a timely manner and being responsible. He wasn't expecting to get it, but nonetheless, it was better than just discarding the notion and never truly knowing. Yep, I'm calling it right now. He's going to go get the Necronomicon.
The student was going to check out a very rare, little-known, but highly intriguing... Yep. Holy shit. A little-known but highly intriguing book that his school happened to own a copy of. Only a handful of prestigious schools around the globe had a copy of it. Norway, Mexico, France, Japan, Spain, the United Kingdom, and the United States. All very prestigious schools, man.
Yes. I, too, enjoy the school of the United States. Come on down to United States Academy.
Do you think... Welcome to America, you. Hey, guys. Do you think he gets good marks and everything and he's going to be let in the restricted section because he goes around at school referring to himself as a folklorist?
It's just like, I was going to the University of France to get my study in bagotry, but then I transferred to the school of the U.S. That way I could get a degree in folkloristry.
It's the only school that in the United States that offers a folkloristry degree.
Hey,
But I'm still getting a minor in bagotry.
Yes.
Well, I could have gone to the University of Japan, but I'm just not all that interested in Weebonomics.
Oh, God.
or as they call it here, a degree in freedom bread.
Oh, God. Oh, shit.
This is a masterclass episode.
Yes.
Brandon, please continue.
I need to go to the UK, the school of the UK. I can get a degree in cash.
It's pronounced quickie.
The rules of the libraries at those schools regarding this literature were the same in each country. Students were allowed to check out the book only for a certain length of time.
Wow. This is blowing that's, my mind.
That's one word that begins with W, David. You might think, wow, I was thinking, what? But wow also is applicable.
You got this.
Is this...
You got this, Alan.
Guys, I know so much about how libraries work now.
But you don't have to take my word for it.
Secondly, students cannot read in the general reading area.
What? What kind of library is this?
Sorry, they could not read it in the general reading area.
Okay.
Is food library. It's for regular jack-offs.
Secondly, students cannot read it in the general reading area. They were required to read it in a certain room which was under surveillance by security cameras, and they could not have their phones or any other device capable of recording inside of it. This is stupid. Third, and although this rule was relative to the student, they were encouraged to have a written request from a teacher to gain access to it. The book itself was nameless for many years, and the author or authors who were completely unknown when it was discovered in the 1700s in Mexico, owned by a wealthy landowner who was likely unaware of what they had in their possession.
Various chapters or books, as they were known in the text themselves in the recent English translation, were written in various languages from all over history. The languages ranged from Old Spanish to Old English to Latin, Sanskrit, and even ancient Egyptian and Mesoamerican hieroglyphics and hieroglyphs respectively. Scholars from all over the globe have met together to regularly compare notes and translations with each other. This particular text was so bizarre that it even challenged the mystery of the Voynich manuscripts.
They couldn't agree on what sort of book it was. Fiction, nonfiction, some considered it a grimoire of sorts, and others believed it was a scientific text. So we are, like, joking that it's the Necronomicon, but it's the Necronomicon.
We are missing the most important detail. Is it bound in human skin?
It's bound to drive us insane. The actual contents of the nameless book were supposedly very dark and eerie, mentioning folklore that was unheard of, lost realms and unknown dimensions, and hideous undocumented creatures. Well, all of it is documented in this book. What the fuck are you talking about? By dint of these topics, the nameless book came to be known as the Book of Lost Secrets.
Shit, I was hoping he was just going to go straight to the library and be like, I need this horrible eldritch tome, and they hand him a Dungeon Master's Guide.
Yeah, I mean, they could have very well done that. It's like, is that stupid? They're like, I need to check out the Book of Lost Secrets, and they're like, is that stupid fucking kid who can't tell the difference between a vulture and a raven?
he wants to understand the eldritch, like, unscrutable nature of this tome that explains eerie folklore and other dimensions. And so we handed him the second edition AD&D Dungeons Master's Guide, and he just sat there for a while, and then he looked at us and went, what the hell is Thaco?
He's just like, I have everything I need now. And then he returns the book, and then he just goes off, finds the vulture, and he's like, magic missile!
I like the idea that he spends all this effort getting the book. He goes out, finds the vulture, and he's just like, ah! And he throws the book at it.
Hey, is that the Book of Lost Secrets? Oh, fuck!
It's really heavy.
Shit, folklorist. Why would you do that?
You're a... Vulture's like, you're a dick.
And he's like, well, you're a talking fucking vulture. He's like, I'm not! Why do you keep saying that? I'm clearly a talking raven.
Go back to the tiki room, you motherfucker.
Read some goddamn Edgar Allan Poe, you son of a bitch.
Guys, are the events of this becoming part of the Ukahaku?
Yes, they are.
You keep freaking the fuck out before I even get to say nevermore.
Oh, this is good. Okay, sure.
Is this a two-parter?
I don't know. How long have you been here?
I think this is a two-parter, guys, because this is like 50 minutes.
Oh, no. Oh, no. This is a two-part. Okay. Yeah.
Which is good, because, I mean, if we're going to do nothing but patrons poison...
Yeah, that's true, so...
This isn't hurting our case.
That's true. So, username, thank you for... I have really no idea. I really don't get it. I mean, you've sent us these two stories, and we can only do one of them. They're both super fucking long. But I appreciate that you sent it nonetheless, because despite the story, I'm still enjoying myself immensely. I mean, it's almost like I asked for it or something, but, I mean, nah. I don't really ask for stories about that are this long and inane, but you know what I mean. Anyway, tune in very soon, and we will do the next part of this story, but I think we need to take a little breather. Before we go anywhere, though, anyone want to make any plugs?
My only plug is for something I'm doing tomorrow, and it's not going to be up by then, so...
Retroactively. Oh, wait, never mind.
Hey, I might save the stream, so if you want to watch a probably very long stream of me highly intoxicated reading the Scholastic novelization of the book Kazam...
Oh, shit!
I'm doing that as a recording this tomorrow. But I'm gonna save the stream and upload it to YouTube as well.
I'm super stoked for that.
So the first and my probably only drunken book on tape recordings.
What time are you doing the stream at? This is for my benefit in the present, not everybody else in the future.
7 p.m. Central Time, I think, is when I decided on doing it.
Okay. Sounds good.
There's a video that I'm in called How Resident Evil Perfected the Jump Scare on Soberdorf's channel. You should go check it out. It's a nice little video about Resident Evil 1 in the Cerberus hallway.
I really enjoyed that video.
Also, during the stream, but you can also donate to me afterwards if you like the stream. I'm taking money to help me get a new computer, so I can start doing things like Ignis Pergamentum again.
Yay.
And there's a whole spin-off UCA podcast I want to host that it would be nice to have a new computer for, because my desktop exploded.
Oof. That's no good.
So my PayPal, I'll have David put a link.
I'll make sure the link gets in the description, either here, you know, wherever you listen to this. And hey, since you guys are here, go ahead and if you're not subscribed to this podcast already, go to benviewnetwork.com/UCA and subscribe. I realize recently a problem's been brought to my attention where after 100 episodes or so, the backlog starts to disappear. I think that's a Squarespace issue. I'm discussing it with the gang over at Benview to see if we can get it worked out. But if you want it, but all the episodes are still archived on the Benview Network. You just have to download them from there rather than the RSS feed. So just a heads up, we're going to try and correct that so they're all available on the Apple Podcasts, and that we're clear on that. Also,
my shout out is to my good friend DeMarcus, who I found out has now listened to every UCA episode and is working his way through every Midnight Marinara.
Dude, nice work, DeMarcus. Hey, D, you want to be on the show sometime?
Oh, he's gonna be.
Good.
Hey, DeMarcus, if anyone calls me a racist, can I say that you're my black friend? That way I can be not a racist.
I guess I'll have to answer that at some time. And actually, while we're at it, I think it's time we introduce a new thing we're doing at the end of every show, because I want to make sure that our patrons at the $10 level and above are getting thanked for all the cool shit they do for us. So our first shout out goes to Austin Clothier. His message to us is, thanks for introducing me to Creepypasta and giving us all such good content. I spent one night on the writing challenge on a whim under a different name. It was fun, and I think I can do better. Look forward to the next challenge. Now I'm trying to remember which writing challenge that was, because now we're in the thick of the Fleming Unit contest. But I mean, it's not really a contest; it's more of a collaboration. But I mean, Austin, thank you for your support, and I wish I could remember off the top of my head which one you entered. This was in.
Honestly, that's a big thing, because it's about building that community. That's what this is all about to us, and building up this genre. We care about it a lot.
I'm impressed we're the people that introduced you to Creepypasta.
Yeah.
But, yeah, thank you. Thank you for your support. And, hey, if you want a shout-out, too, you just... I've already said the criterion, so you can leave us a little message, and we'll read it on the show. All right. So we'll take a little break. For us, it'll only be a little bit. For you, it'll be 1,000 years in the dungeon.
Ha ha, yes.
Quite. No, parents!
To all who come to this happy podcast, welcome.
Nothing new is something new.
That great poets imitate and improve.
Where our small ones steal and spoil.
Hi, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Justin.
And if it wasn't readily apparent at that, we're huge nerds about remakes. That's why we're doing the Nothing New podcast.
Once a month, we'll sit down and talk about a remake in detail and its original, covering them in whatever order they come out, from Wizard of Oz to It and beyond.
They're remaking Stuart Gordon's 1986 sci-fi horror classic From Beyond?
Oh, no. Not yet.
Oh, that's going to be a long time coming. Anyway, if that sounds up your alley, come join Justin and I, and maybe a guest or two, to explore the wonderful world of remakes, film by film.
Remakes have been done forever. People talk about Scarface, don't even know that was a remake.
Oh, nicely said.
Don't thank me. Thank Antoine Fuqua.
This podcast is a part of the Benview Network.
You can find this and other podcasts like it at BenviewNetwork.com.